Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
Orioles finally make a massive signing. Pete Alonso, 5 years, $155 million. And let's go out to Window Nation Fan Guest Hotline. Andy Koska covers the O's for the Baltimore Banners, down there covering the winter meetings, and joins us now. And Andy, thank you as always for your time. We appreciate it. So first and foremost, your reaction to the Polar Bear signing.
Well, thanks for having me. It was a massive move. And we knew yesterday, you know, the Orioles were very competitive for Kyle Schwarber. In the end, it's, you know, probably turned out that the Orioles helped drive up the price for him on his desired return to Philadelphia. But we reported yesterday that the Orioles were pivoting hard to Pete Alonso. And here they are. I mean, this is a big boy offer. You know, this is, you know, 5 years and $155 million is by far, obviously, the largest contract that Michael Elias has doled out in his time in Baltimore. And it's not the end. I mean, they are in the mix for starting pitching as well, be it trade or free agency.
Your mic not on. Oh,
there we go. That's exactly where I was going to go, Andy, where you make this move to bring in Alonso. That tells you that there's going to be more big moves to come. And you tweeted out earlier that their interest for Ranger Suarez is still ongoing. Are you expecting them to land one of these big free agent starting pitchers?
It might not be the free agent side. They could decide that there's better value just with how their roster is made up at this exact moment to trade, say, Ryan Mountcastle or Coey Mayo, as well as, you know, some prospects to land Edward Cabrera from, you know, Miami, or Chris Bubich, a name actually that has been drawing interest. You know, teams are interested in Dylan Beavers. So that is a name, you know, people, you know, think, you know, oh, they're going to trade a first baseman, but, you know, they might, but you know, the 30 games or whatever that Dylan Beavers played last year, I mean, it really interested a lot of teams. So he is also in trade discussions and being mentioned as a person of interest from other teams. So I do expect Baltimore to add to the rotation. I would not be shocked if they do manage to land one of the big names. You know, they remain interested in Ranger Suarez. I saw that I think it was John Morosi reported that they remain interested in Framber Valdez. You know, there's Michael King is probably in that mix. So there are multiple ways they could go. This is uncharted territory for Baltimore.
Yeah.
It's not something they've managed to do before. Obviously, last year they offered big money for Corbin Burns and, you know, finished second fiddle. They offered big money for Kyle Schwarber and finished second, or whatever wherever they finished, you know, in the finalist group, so to speak. And here they are. They got it over the wall, you know, which is what Pete Alonso is going to be doing a lot at Camden Yards.
Well, Andy, you're in that clubhouse pretty much every day. How big do you think this is for the peace of mind and taking some pressure off the likes of Westberg and Gunnar in the middle of that lineup?
Yeah, I actually was just turned in a follow-up story, you know, kind of delving into that. This is, consider Gunnar Henderson last year, the expectations on him with runners in scoring position to come through. He did really well with runners in scoring position, but he was also intentionally walked five times and walked 13.
He didn't get the opportunities. Yeah.
So they, you know, pitchers knew they could kind of pitch around Gunnar with runners on. Suddenly, I imagine if it's Gunnar leading off and Pete Alonso two, or you could have, you know, Gunnar third. I would prefer Gunnar third with Pete Alonso fourth, just my personal preference. Yeah. But that is incredible coverage for Gunnar Henderson Sutherland. Yes. You have a guy like Pete Alonso behind. What pitcher in the right mind is going to say, yeah, let's give Gunnar a free pass here because we want that guy. You know, we want to face that guy. No, it's Gunnar is going to be getting a lot of opportunities to hit, you know, attractive pitches because of the way that you have the help behind him. This also helps Adley Rutschman. There's less pressure on him to be a slugger. You know, the same with Colton Cowser, who wanted to try to, not necessarily his doing, but was instructed like, hey, let's hit some home runs. Mm-hmm. He doesn't have to be a 30 home run guy. And that might free him up to say, okay, let's go the other way. Let's slap the ball to left field. Let's get on base because we have other dudes in this lineup that can get us home. So I really do think, yes, it is one addition. It impacts every single person in that lineup. And this is, you know, and I'm sorry to ramble a little bit, but this is a veteran guy that knows what it's like in the postseason and then knows what it's like in a big market like New York and can handle the pressure. Adding him to the clubhouse is, I realize, you know, he's not the Kyle Schwarber reputation of a clubhouse leader. But Pete Alonso was a clubhouse leader, and he is a steadying presence. And so this was really a clubhouse that was screaming out for some sort of veteran presence. Mm-hmm. I mean, Jordan Westberg said as much that he would like, you know, last year he told me and I wrote an article about it, how he and others would like a veteran guy in free agency to come to Baltimore. They got their wish because suddenly they have a slow heartbeat in the four hole of their lineup who can hit, you know, 40 home runs a year pretty much and play 160 games. And this is a guy that for five straight years has played 152 games or more. So the durability, knock on wood, is there. And it really is a massive signing. And props to Mike Elias. You know, I know he has deserved criticism for multiple things, and this does not absolve other moves. No. But, hey, he put his money where his mouth is. And same with David Rubenstein. They made a big deal and got a guy to Baltimore.
Talking to Andy Koskett, Inside Access here on The Fan. Andy, are you surprised at how, and I don't aggressive, this is the big move, but this is the fifth move they made already this offseason. Mike Elias has notoriously been deliberate in the offseason, taking his time. We were talking earlier, even the Corbin Burnes trade was done in February. Are you surprised at how quickly they're moving on stuff?
I suppose surprise is a word, but I think what it more so is just a reflection that the front office realized that they messed up last year. Like this, that they did not set up a team to win.
Yeah.
And some of it was injuries, which is out of their control. But at the end of the day, it's when a front office sets up a roster and they're, you know, is not the depth to handle the injuries they had, and there's such slumping, you know, up and down the lineup. That is a failure on the front office. They recognize that, and so I think what we're seeing this offseason is a front office that is determined to put pieces in place early, to be aggressive, you know, to use your term, potentially a little urgency, although that might be Mike Elias' least favorite word in the dictionary. Whenever we ask about urgency, he says, there is no such thing as urgency.
Oh, but, trust me, I'm aware.
There is. Like, it's absolutely like this is showing a sense of urgency and saying, okay, like we need to not only fix the rotation, which they have yet to do. So that is a major ticket item that's still, you know, has to be done. But you're looking at a lineup that suddenly looks like, wow, this is one of the best lineups in the American League, if not the best. And of course, injuries can happen, but you know the lineup is so much deeper with a guy like Pete Alonso.
Andy, what about the bullpen? Heading into the offseason, he needed to completely remake the bullpen. You brought back Andrew Kittredge, and you bring in a closer as well, but how many more moves are you expecting there?
Yeah, I'm expecting a couple. Some of them, those like minor league with a spring training invite, you know, get a guy in that, you know, maybe a strike gold, maybe it's somebody that you can even option. That'd be great if they found some optionability because right now they don't have that much in terms of, you know, flexibility in the bullpen unless they really believe in, you know, Grant Wolfram to be a piece and guys of that ilk, you know, that featured at the end of last year. But I do expect a couple bullpen moves. I mean, Helsley was obviously a big one. Getting a closer that they believe in, getting Kittredge back is a good move, you know, because he is a veteran presence. First off, that can pitch in high leverage situations, be it as a setup man or even earlier in games if he's needed. But I have a suspicion that we're going to see a left-hander come in, you know, add another lefty to the bullpen, a name that I am, this is not sourced, this is my pure speculation before anyone runs with it. I would not be shocked if like a Danny Coulomb, you know, with a guy that they know really well can get on a 1-year deal, and trust that, you know, probably, you know, if things don't necessarily go right, it's $4.5 million, you know, out of the bank account, which at this point they seem willing to spend that kind of money.
I have a bit of a Dustin May fetish. What do you think about Dustin May in the back end of a bullpen?
Well, the nice thing about a Dustin May would be can cover multiple innings, right?
Yeah.
I think there's definitely a swing man type would be really enjoyable, you know, if they could figure it out.
That kind of power, however
that might look. Yeah, it's if you can have a guy, you know, who twice a week pitches 2 innings, you know, and gets you out of a mess of a 4-inning start, saves your bullpen. You know, that is really impactful pitching. So that, I mean, totally agree. I don't know which way they're going to go though. You know, it's so many reliever options, but I do expect bullpen help.
Andy Koska covers the O's for the Baltimore Banner. Andy, great stuff, man. Thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it.
Yeah, of course. See you guys.
Coming up next, we get to the Ravens, and I saw John Harbaugh just speaking to the media there on the practice field today. But what about the
not everybody?
Yeah, not everybody.
It's a Wednesday,
so you can guess. One guy there was there that we didn't
tomorrow
expect.
Tomorrow will be Thursday.
That's
one day closer to Friday.
I learned that every 15 minutes. Joe Burrow kind of owns the Ravens. We'll explain next here on the
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.
Ravens back on the practice field. No Lamar Jackson or Chidobe Awuzie. Now, hard for what it's worth, speaking to the media, said that Lamar got an NIR rest day. We'll see when the injury report comes out.
He don't do Wednesdays anymore.
Yeah. Keaton Mitchell did practice, though, which is a great sign. Harbs also said Tavius Robinson or Darius Washington have a real chance to play on Sunday, for what that's worth. But let's look at the quarterback on the other sideline. Joe Burrow kind of owns the Ravens. Even last year, when they lost both games, he threw for like 1 million yards.
Yeah, I mean, McDonald held him in check twice. Other than that, he's pretty much lit him up. I mean, he's averaged over 8.3 yards per attempt per game in 6 of his last 9 games against them. He's got multiple passing touchdowns in 6 of his last 9 games against them. I mean, some of the yardage totals against the Ravens, 416, 525, 392, 428. I mean, in his career, 10 games, 23 touchdowns, 5 picks, 65% completions. He's thrown for almost 3,000 yards against them in those 10 games. So extrapolate that for a full season. And a QB rating of 102.3. Yeah, pretty good. Not too shabby. Problematic. He threw for 9 passing touchdowns against them last year.
He's been spectacular. Outside of his first start, his rookie season, when the Bengals were terrible, and that's when Wink almost got the shutout, and Taylor kicked the field goal, and then Joe Burrow absolutely eviscerated them in 2021, threw for even more yards that year than he did against the Ravens in 24. Mike McDonald had the secret sauce, and for those 2 years, plus that wild card playoff game, they were able to hold this Bengals offense in check. Heck, remember, it was, I can't remember, Sunday Night Football or Thursday Night, where Brandon Stevens put, you know, Ja'Marr Chase on lockdown in a game where that was weird. That happened. But they just haven't been able to replicate it. And you can go back to the last game not that long ago on Thanksgiving, where the first half, Cincy was moving on the Ravens, but they were able to hold them to field goals. They didn't give up a touchdown that first half. Then, boom, Joe Burrow really got in the rhythm, back-to-back touchdowns, and that was all she wrote that night.
Yeah, I think they're going to be hard-pressed to duplicate the first half of his first game back in 2 months. And I also think, look, there's people out there who think the Bengals season's over. Bengals have not been mathematically eliminated from the playoffs.
No.
And if they win this game, they can stave off being one surefire way to be mathematically eliminated
is to lose this game.
So it's an all or nothing game for a guy who threw for at least 300 yards and at least three passing touchdowns in the final, six games of last season. And he's 8-1 in his last nine starts. And that one loss came through a pick six and some snow shenanigans that went against him last week. I think the Baltimore Ravens offense better be prepared to score 30-some points in this football game, because I don't think they're going to have the secret sauce to stop Joe Burrow. Well, he's going to be an empty a lot. He's going to throw the ball 50-some times, and he's going to dare them to either force me to throw it away or make a play on the ball in flight, and somebody stop Jamar Chase. Somebody stop Yoshi Voss in the slot. Somebody, if I want to throw 10 times to Chase Brown for 100 yards, I'm going to do it. I don't think you can do anything about it. We'll find out if he's right or not, but I think that's what he and Zach Taylor are talking about right now.
Well, you bring up the offense. Derrick Henry's going to need more than 10 carries like he had Thanksgiving this week. And we can say what you want about Henry and the success against Pittsburgh. He also forced the most missed tackles he's had in a game in that game. Mm-hmm. And he needs more plays than he had that Thanksgiving night, because they got to keep that Cincinnati offense on the sideline. He had 25 carries against Pittsburgh.
I would say that T. Higgins unlikely to play helps the Ravens, but we just saw that a couple weeks ago, and it didn't like, once Burrow got his lather going in the second half, it didn't matter to T. Higgins what didn't play in that football game.
No. I mean, and again, he was off in the first half. Yep. He had 17 incompletions to 15 completions. 32 passing attempts in the first half. In his first game back in 2 months. Again, that tells you what they think of the Ravens' defense. Mm-hmm. Aaron Rodgers coming out of the gate doing stuff he hasn't done all year. First play on the road at Baltimore in a must-win spot. Shows you what they really think internally about this defense.
They were also put in terrible spots. Five turnovers. Their average starting position was the 48-yard line. Look, they were bad in the second half. Burrow diced them up in the second half. The offense did the defense no favors in that football game.
No, but I mean, look, the problem for the defense is they're going against Joe Burrow in Cincinnati.
Yeah.
That defense stinks. They better be able to move the ball defense. Better be able to score way more than you scored in that game, and you better be prepared to score 30. But, he also had a drop in the end zone. He had a guy beat on a double route who broke it off, on a double move, who broke off the route. And now he's been actually back at practice for 2 weeks and played a couple games. I think you're going to see a better version of him at home on Sunday than you saw Thanksgiving night in Baltimore.
To Bone's point, though, they give up 5 yards a carry. Derrick Henry's got to touch the football. At this point, you got to see what that looks like against this defense.
You got to play ball control. You got to keep them on the sidelines. And even if he's not averaging the 5 yards per carry, they stuck with him against Pittsburgh. Even though he was under 4 yards per carry in that game, they stuck with him. So you got to see some of that on Sunday.
Good news, Keaton Mitchell on the practice field. He did hobble off on Sunday against the Steelers and never returned to the game. So maybe Keaton Mitchell will play in this football game on Sunday.
I hope so. They need him. There's explosive possibilities there within the confines of an offense that doesn't have many options for that these days.
No, it does not.
Realistic options, in-form options, not many.
Ravens at the Bengals Sunday. We're at Barrel House Live on Sunday, 10 a.m. Ravens and Bengals.
Roll out the barrel.
Bone and I, hour one.
It's an awesome setup out
great
there.
Place. Great place.
Wait, they got the promo free breakfast, drink specials, food specials. Yeah. Come by.
What did you have? What did you go with? Was it like a breakfast buffet kind of thing?
Well, I had a donut and a coffee.
They did have donuts.
Food-wise, I had shrimp tacos, and they were very good. They were very good.
So it was like a brunch.
Well, no, they had a menu, too.
They had a menu. They were serving. I didn't eat until pregame was done. So
gotcha.
At that point, it was gotcha. Lunch.
I had a donut. It was good.
Yeah.
It was very good.
Shout out.
Coming up next, Army-Navy's this weekend. We'll be broadcasting live from downtown for Army-Navy on Friday. Tim Murray from VSiN. Does he have any best bets for Army-Navy? What's he think of the playoffs? We'll talk college football with Tim.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $150 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $150 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$150 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
If you have a podcast and want to monetize it, stress-free, you need the Odyssey Creator Lab. We'll host your podcast for free, and our experienced sales team brings in the advertisers and the revenue. Easy. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com and let us show you the money.
Next here on The Fan. One college football game this weekend. It's Army-Navy, but we do have the playoff brackets. The playoffs start in just a week plus. Let's bring on our friend from VSiN, Tim Murray. And Tim, thank you as always for your time. We appreciate it. Let's get to the playoff. Obviously, you're a Notre Dame fan. So how do you feel about Notre Dame? And how do you feel about the AD, some of the stuff he's been spewing since the Notre Dame had been left out of the playoff?
Yeah, I think at this point it's time to be quiet and move on. It is, I understood the decision to go on Dan Patrick's show, and I think he did a couple other hits on Monday, which made some sense. The press conference seemed a bit unnecessary, even though I thought he conducted himself well and made some interesting points. Overall, though, kind of going back to Sunday, guys, I actually had no issue with Miami being in over Notre Dame. I just had an issue with the process, right? Like, put them in over on Notre Dame on Tuesday. We knew that Notre Dame and Miami weren't going to play over the weekend. So if you want head-to-head to matter, okay, no problem. Then make it matter on Tuesday when everything was done. And I just thought the whole process was clunky, guys. I mean, for them to state that they went back and rewatched the game, all right, well, what were you doing prior to that? Like, it was – the whole thing was a disaster, how it all played out. Like I said, head-to-head has to matter. And I think for the overall sport, I think head-to-head mattering is important. So Miami beating Notre Dame, and I give credit to Miami too, guys. When the first rankings came out in early November, Miami was 18. Well, they had lost two of their last three games, and they weren't playing good football. They played really good football down the stretch. Almost every metric was lockstep with Notre Dame. So I had no problem with them jumping them. I think the bigger issue I had was this ridiculousness the previous week to jump Alabama over Notre Dame because of a, quote, gutsy call on fourth down against a 5-7 football team, and to remind us, well, they were up 17-0. Yeah, they lost that 17-0 lead. It was 20-20 when they made said gutsy call. Mm-hmm. And then for them to be non-competitive against Auburn, I just felt like Alabama, for some reason, got the benefit of the doubt, like Nick Saban still on the sidelines. And they lied and said, well, we don't want to punish teams. Well, you punished teams the previous 3 years who lost games on championship weekend, and you punished a team this year in BYU. Yeah. So, it stinks as a Notre Dame fan, but to sum it all up, I know I've gone on forever, is don't lose two games if you're Notre Dame, to be honest. Your two biggest games, unfortunately, came in weeks 1 and 3. You lost both of them. You played awesome football. In the eyes of odds makers, they're the third or fourth best team in college football. But at the end of the day, their two biggest games they lost, and they really only have themselves to blame. I just thought the committee did a disservice to this whole process, kind of saying that the head-to-head didn't matter the Tuesday prior to ultimately on Sunday telling us, oh, wait, just kidding, the head-to-head did matter.
Yeah. Well, let's take an early look at the four playoff games for next weekend. Tim, any spreads or totals jump out to you that you got an early jump on?
Yeah, I bet two games, Tim. The first one we'll talk about is Ken's Oregon Duck.
Yeah.
I laid it with Oregon in this spot. And, I watched the entire Sun Belt Championship last Friday night, and shout out to the JMU fans chucking snowballs at the punter. That was kind of
that was good.
An interesting tactic there. But I look at Oregon and, you know, Ken, I'm going to give you guys some love. Like, I feel like they're wildly underrated right now. I just feel like the whole talk about the Big Ten right now is Indiana and Ohio State. Understandably so, they're the two best teams. But Oregon, taking a step back, guys, thinking about how they played against USC, how they played against Washington, knowing that they've been banged up on the offensive line, they're missing two really good wide receivers in Gary Bryant and DeCorian Moore. So I think Oregon right now is a team that is maybe a little bit underrated. And you guys know me. I don't like the late numbers like 21, 21 and a half. Mm-hmm. But I do think Oregon is going to have something to prove. And also, you think back to last year, guys, they got embarrassed in the playoffs.
Yeah,
right? They were the one seed. They play in the Rose Bowl. They're down 34-0 in the first half to Ohio State. So I think Dan Lanning, and we know he's a really good motivator, I think he's going to have his team more than buttoned up for this game. I was not really all that impressed by what I saw from James Madison against Troy last Friday night. So I laid the chalk there. And then the other game, guys, is I think I'm going to be in on Alabama. And, you know, it's kind of funny because from a handicapping standpoint, you do see this from time to time where the team that is the one that's being criticized the most, which is Alabama right now, which their last impression was horrendous, which was Alabama. And then they find a way to turn it around and get better and win a game. So, you know, everyone thinks Alabama kind of stinks right now. They shouldn't be in. I would agree with that. They have not played good football the last couple of weeks. But I think ultimately, guys, I think I'm going to be on Alabama and around a pick'em roll against Oklahoma next Friday night in a rematch of a game we saw in the middle of November when the point spread was 6.5. Now, that game was in Tuscaloosa, obviously. But if you go back and look at that game, Alabama should have won the football game. They outgained them by almost 200 yards. Turnovers were their undoing in that one. So if they can figure out with Jam Miller likely returning from injury to get some sort of run game going, I do think I like Alabama next Friday night against Oklahoma on the road.
Let's take a step back out, pull the lens out, and not just look at next week's games, but let's look at the field at large. And you said it earlier.
Sure.
A lot of people think Notre Dame's one of the five best teams in the country. You don't have to get through them now to win this whole thing. Some teams have buys. We can argue whether those buys, if they're a month long or too long. Mm-hmm. Was there anybody you liked value on to win the whole damn thing?
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's crazy is thinking back to last week, and I just want to point it out, obviously the number's not there. Miami was 200-1 to win the title last week because there was obviously the uncertainty of will they get in, will they not get in, and they obviously get in, and now they're down to around 25-1. I don't think, in my opinion, I don't think Miami I can trust them to win four straight games.
No.
I think they have the talent, but when you have Mario Cristobal on that sideline, when you have Carson Beck, who at times can turn the ball over like crazy, you know, for me, look, I think Ohio State is the best football team in college football still. You know, are they perfect? Absolutely not. Are they capable of being beaten? Yes, we just saw that with Indiana. I would probably, if I had to bet one of those two, I would probably lean towards Ohio State over Indiana, even though Ohio State, of course, won the head-to-head, or excuse me, Indiana won the head-to-head. I think for me, guys, the winner of the 4-5 is the team that I'm most intrigued in, Oregon and Texas Tech. And I think Oregon, when you look at the way that, as I mentioned, how they've been playing, I'm very curious about them. Texas Tech, they've just been an absolute bully, you know, every single week. The lone game they lost, they didn't have their starting quarterback in Morton. You know, I do worry a little bit, guys, about the strength of schedule and were they tested enough. So I think for me, if I were to look in the air quotes value bin, so to speak, it would be in that 4-5 game. I would look at Oregon, Texas Tech on New Year's Day. I forget where that game's going to be played, but it doesn't matter. I think ultimately, I think that's the game that I'm most curious about for an opportunity to maybe get to the championship game. And once again, I don't want people to take this away like, oh, another Indiana hater. Look, I think Indiana is vastly improved from a year ago. They deserve every accolade. They are the number one team in the country right now. But I think if you're talking about it from a betting standpoint, I think for me, the winner of the 4-5 game is the one that I think is the most interesting from a value standpoint.
Tim Murray, before we let you go, anything you like at all? I know you used to be part of those Navy broadcasts, Army-Navy this weekend here in Charm City.
Yeah, I want to correct you, Ken. You said there's only one game this weekend. How dare you overlook the L.A. Bowl, which will follow the Heisman Trophy, Boise State and Washington
My
at
bad.
SoFi Stadium.
Yeah. Huh?
Come on, Ken. Get it together.
Wake up, Ken.
Forgot about the L.A. Bowl.
The L.A. Bowl. The
A.K.A.
the
La Bowl.
Prestigious L.A. Bowl. I would say this. It's around 6.5 right now. If it gets to 7, I might have to take Army. Look, the way these games play, I know last year, guys, Navy was a 6.5 point underdog, and they blew out Army, right? So I think when you think about how this rivalry tends to play, I think that's the look. Hey, real quickly, on both of those two teams, the betting market is going nuts right now on both Army and Navy and their two respective bowl games. Army opened as a 3.5 point dog. They're now about a 3-point favorite against UConn in the Fenway Bowl. I think DraftKings, double check me, I think it's -142. I still like Army in that spot. You know, it's the second straight appearance for UConn in the Fenway Bowl. They lost their head coach, Jim Mora Jr. He goes to Colorado State. I would highly anticipate Skylar Bell, their stud wide receiver, to opt out of this game and not play. I think Army is a bet-on team in bowl season, and I also think Navy. They opened a 6.5 point underdog to Cincy in the Liberty Bowl on January 2nd, guys. They're now the favorite against Cincinnati. So betting on service academies and bowl games, The sharp guys cannot bet enough on Army and Navy right now in their two bowl games.
Wow. Tim Murray, let people know what's going on at VSiN.
Yeah, check me out on Saturday, Masson 2, the VSiN College Football Tailgate Show. We will be breaking out Army-Navy. We'll be going into that prestigious L.A. Bowl that Ken wants to pretend like it
yes.
doesn't exist.
Yeah.
Come on now.
Apologies.
And a lot of playoff talk, obviously. So check that out. And also the VSiN College Football Betting Podcast. New episode is out now, and we'll have another one out tomorrow.
Always great, man. Thanks so much for your time,
Thank
buddy.
Thank you.
All right, boys. Talk to you.
Coming up next, get back to the Ravens. We'll get to the Orioles in the 4 o'clock hour. We're taking your calls at 4:15, the Pete Alonso signing. But Ravens defense, nobody stepped up Sunday against the Steelers. Will anybody step up this Sunday in Cincinnati? We discuss next here on The Fan. Ravens coming up back-to-back home games where they gave up 59 points to the Bengals and Steelers. They faced the Bengals in Cincinnati Sunday, and we talked on Monday about the fact that like nobody showed up defensively, really, for this Ravens team. Kyle Hamilton, kind of a no-show. Kyle Van Noy looks cooked. Anybody going to step up this Sunday in Cincinnati for this defense?
Well, I think it better be Kyle Van Noy. I mean, Kyle Hamilton. It needs to start there. He's the most recently paid guy. He's the youngest of their blue chip players on defense. He's the one who has the shape shifting ability and the joker and move him around and all the different things he can do. He needs to affect the football when it's being carried by an individual and when it's in flight or before it gets in flight. Like, they better find a way to unlock Kyle Hamilton here. You know, Joe Burrow in his career against the Ravens has only been blitzed 20% of the time, and he shredded him. If he's going to shred you, maybe let him shred you trying to blitz 50% of the time.
Yeah.
Like, they didn't blitz him enough the last time, and when they did, it was fairly effective. Now, especially in the first half, and you could say how much of that was rust and lack of practice and lack of timing and all that stuff. I have a hard time seeing them winning this football game unless Kyle Hamilton is the best player on their defense and maybe the best player on either team's defense. Like, if Joseph Asai is a better game than Kyle Hamilton, then guess what?
We got problems.
The Bengals are probably not going to be mathematically eliminated, and the Ravens are going to be on the cusp of being mathematically eliminated.
Hamilton's the easy one, and he's coming off a pretty disappointing game for me. I was talking him up a lot last week, thinking it would be a big game for him, and it's just kind of a non-factor, guys. Three tackles.
Even with Darnell Washington
passes,
leaving
defense,
the game, you'd think, okay, we don't have to deal with that seven-footer.
Now, in that game against Cincinnati, he did have a tackle for a loss. He had the pass defensed on the fourth down goal line stand, which was a big play at that time in the football game. But he's going to need to be even better than he was on Thanksgiving night. But the other guy that I'm really looking at is Marlon Humphrey. He's got to be better than he's been over these past couple of weeks.
Is that just what it is?
I'd be more looking at Nate Wiggins than Marlon Humphrey.
Yeah. Sure, but Marlon's getting picked on at this point.
Like, he's not good.
Exactly.
Well, Wiggins got picked on in the Cincinnati game.
Yeah.
Everybody got picked on until Awuzie got a shot with Chase, and then it settled down.
But remember, Wiggins seemed like into the fight. He had that pass breakup in the end zone, was chirping at Chase, then he got hurt and left the game.
Yeah.
So, like, but Marlon seems to be chasing a lot.
Yes.
Marlon's got to just be in the slot, and I think this is going to be a tough assignment for Marlon, even if he is just primarily in the slot, no matter who he's up against. Look, I don't know how much they're going to run the ball, and I think Roquan is what he is. He's going to get exposed by Chase Brown if they throw it to Chase Brown 7, 8, 9, 10 times. But can he do something that gets them off the football field?
Mm-hmm.
A tackle for loss, an early thumping, you know, a hit that changes momentum, that gets the sideline sprung to life. Like, he better be capable of that. Like, that should be, better be a part of his skill set. But, yeah, I don't think any of these pass rushers are going to step up in any big way. I don't think Gilman is what he is. I think Marlon is what he is. I think the young linebackers are going to get picked on here. That's just the way it's going to go. And one of their $20 million defenders better play like a $20 million defender.
Well, you bring up the fact that they don't really try to blitz Joe Burrow for the most part. But part of Thanksgiving night, and especially it was the touchdown to Yoshi Vaj, they sent the house there, and that put Roquan Smith pretty much man-to-man on Yoshi Vaj, which is a significant mismatch. Yeah. When they blitz, they got to get home. And they had the one timely blitz where Marlon came in clean and he ended up getting a sack. But they can't get burned like they were on Thanksgiving night when sending the house.
One other guy that we haven't mentioned that he's Travis Jones. Like, Travis Jones needs to either push the pocket and get a tackle for get off the field on like a third and short, or push the lineman into Joe Burrow, maybe force a bad pass. Something that didn't happen at all in that game Thursday night.
A signature game out of him would be huge. I just feel like they're so depleted up there.
About Tavius Robinson? Sounds like he's going
to
play.
Yeah, okay. Says I'm ready to go. He's talking in the locker room, which is a good sign.
It's always a good sign.
Kyle Hamilton.
Better play like that.
Kyle
Hamilton
needs to have a star game.
Yes.
And he's coming off maybe one of his most invisible performances. Like, we don't see many Kyle Hamilton games where he's got three tackles, one solo.
It was quiet.
Coming up next, the Orioles, and we'll get to the Pete Alonso of it all, signing Pete Alonso to a contract. But Mike Elias spoke at the winter meetings. We will hear from the president of baseball ops and talk about his new toy, Pete Alonso, next here on The Fan.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Make money from your podcast with the Odyssey Creator Lab. You create the show, we bring the advertisers. Apply now at creators.odyssey.com.